And I definitely really struggled from early on just to look up and go, okay, there's, you know, women that I wanted to be like, which was quite hard for me early on. So I think out of when I was there, there was probably about 40 partners. I think there were two of them were women. And, you know, even in business today, like my main role is business development. And I find it quite challenging because a lot of the people and the decision makers I have to deal with are men.
Welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast, where we talk all things business, Web3, and NFTs. We're on a mission to educate, elevate, and empower women into the world of Web3. So join us on this journey as we learn together from leading experts. And remember, this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. So please do your own research and enjoy today's episode.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening to the Sisterhood Club podcast. Today's episode is going to be slightly different. As some of you are aware, we hosted our first Sisterhood Social in Real Life event and we recorded the whole panel discussion. So I am very excited to be sharing it with you today. There are some absolute golden nuggets in here. There are some laugh out loud moments in here. So enjoy, and I would love to hear your feedback. So please reach out to me on socials, comment in the podcast show notes below, and I look forward to hearing from you all. And I really hope you enjoy today's very special episode.
An in-depth introduction to each and every single one of them, but I think it will be really nice to kick off for you all to hear directly from them. So if you would all like to introduce yourself and just tell the audience a little bit about who you are and your journey, your own very unique journeys into Web3, that would be wonderful. And you've got the mic.
Apparently I'm going first.
You're going first.
It's so nice to see so many Aussie people interested in Web3. Like, honestly, when I was in Clubhouse and Twitter Spaces talking about crypto and Web3 3 years ago, it was a very foreign concept that we would have so many women in Web3 and so many Aussie founders in this space. So congratulations to both of you. Super excited for this first event. My name's Catherine Boychuk. For those of you that don't know me, I'm STEM Queen. You can find me on Twitter at kboychuk. And I stepped into Web3 3 years ago. I'm a CTO, 20 years in technology. Was a former chief operating officer at Telstra Enterprise, so know technology inside and out, and know what it's like to be a woman trying to take an executive role in technology and raising three daughters. It became really obvious to me that I was going to have to transition and be an early adopter in Web3 if I was going to ensure that it was an equitable place for women to build and found and not just work for other people. And so that's really my mission, to help onboard as many women founders as possible into Web3 so that we actually make the best use of a decentralized opportunity for everyone. So look forward to meeting so many of you tonight.
Thank you.
Hi guys, my name is Lisa Tay and it's so nice to see so many familiar faces and new faces. So thank you so much for giving up your time to come tonight. It's really great to see some men as well. So, you know, it's really awesome. I think women definitely need to do more to support other women, but also I think, you know, men play a really big role in actually helping women get to, you know, where they can go in the workplace. And I started my career, I like to say I'm a recovering tax lawyer. So
do you ever recover from law?
No, you don't.
Tax.
Definitely not tax.
I went law, you went tax. Yeah. So it shows that we're tech geeks.
Yeah, you definitely don't recover, unfortunately. Got a lot of scars, but I won't talk about that tonight. This isn't therapy. I did that earlier this week. But I actually fell down the rap. Oh, I'm going to probably date myself. I discovered social, like, God, when Facebook first started. So that's a really long time ago. And I just fell in love with social media and the fact that you could consume content at scale and share content at scale. So I escaped the world of tax after somehow falling down that hole for about 7 years, and I started my first agency, a digital marketing agency called Cody Agency, about 7 years ago. And I just became obsessed with helping people and companies share their stories and their mission on social media. And then last year I went down the Web3 rabbit hole. The first NFT that I bought was actually the Matrix NFT. I love Keanu Reeves, like, honestly.
Oh, yeah, cool.
If anyone's got his number, that would be great. Just talk to me after the panel. So I got up at 4 a.m. actually to get that NFT, which is quite crazy. And it was like very early on. It was probably November last year, and the tech was not great. And so I ended up buying the NFT at 4 p.m. the next day because I was waiting for that long, which was pretty crazy. But I thought, okay, this is going to be the future. It's going to change the way that we work, live, and play. So I started a Web3-focused agency called Mooning, which was like a really good idea, I thought, at the time. And now I'm like, it's like just to do with butts. And like, I'm like going to become that butt girl, which is like really annoying. So I'm just embracing it. But you won't see my ass, don't worry. Unless you want to, of course. But yeah, don't think anyone wants to. Save that for OnlyFans, no. But yeah, just really excited to see the ecosystem like really grow. I think Greg from NFT Fest is here. I think I saw him before. But yeah, he's there. Yeah. But you know, that's coming up in November. So I definitely encourage all of you to go and, you know, get tickets for that. It's honestly just great to see people like Greg and, you know, Pam and Georgie just do events like this because it really brings us all together. And, you know, I feel like it's really great. And I know it sounds so cliched, you know, to be focused on community, but that's one of the things I love about Web3. So really glad to and honored to be in such great company. So thanks for having me.
Wow. Thanks. Thanks, Lisa. All right, it feels really exciting. It feels a bit like a movement, like the start, we're at the start of something awesome. So my name's Liza Boston. I've been a tech entrepreneur for 35 years now, so I'm outing myself. I got my first Commodore 64 and started programming because there's a hot bloke down the street, one of my brother's mates, and I thought, now I'm going to get one, I'm not going to get it. Most people start a band, and I... So then we got the computer, had to go to computer school. What? Oh, this is not part of the bargain. So, of course, went to computer school, started coding. And then, you know, I was of the age where when I started at Melbourne Uni, you could deliver a handwritten essay. And when I finished, it was all online. So I'm the same age as Sergey and Larry, the Google guys. I popped out of uni and realized really quickly that no one knew this. Anything about this thing called the internet. Like, oh my God, that's a business opportunity right there. So I started my first tech company. I built and scaled fiber optic networks around the world. I coached big companies how to spend all their money and build e-commerce solutions. And then somehow I found myself in San Francisco, California in 2007. And there's a guy called Tim O'Reilly, who had coined the term Web 2.0. And I'd heard about this conference. I'm like, oh, I've got to go. This is so exciting. This is a rewrite web. This is the start of social. This is everything we've ever dreamed of. This is extraordinary. And I remember ringing them up and saying, you know, listen, where's my invitation? Like, I've applied online and haven't seen it come in the post. Got to book flights. I said, sorry, you know, it's invitation only. I said, well, who's making that decision? That's crazy. Wait, why aren't I on the list? I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a founder. And you can imagine in Australia in 2007, those terms had never even been heard of. You know, there was no VC industry in this country. You know, I find out blagged my way in, and they said, okay, you know, I spoke to me, it was okay, you're on the list. And I get there, and I remember booking that was 10 grand US to go to the gig, and, you know, as a startup founder, that was a lot. I'm like, I've got to go to government grant. Booked in the YCA down the street, and I rock up, and on the first day, there's 1,000 people there. Like, there was, the first two people I met were Sergey and Larry. I met Mark Zuckerberg. He sold a 1% share of his company to Microsoft for $350 million. Rupert Murdoch turned up. He bought MySpace for $580 million. I said, "G'day, mate, Krakatini. What are you doing here?" And he's like, "What's a young girl like you doing here?" Because, by the way, there's about 5 women in the whole room. There's 1,000 people. I met Marissa Meyer from who was Google then, who's Yahoo now. Mary Meeker. You could literally count them on the back of your hand, which was great for cut through. And at the time, I thought this is, I self-selected myself next to Rupert Murdoch and I said, come, I said, throw me a bone here. You know, I'm trying to start a media empire. Can you give me just one tip, just hot off the press? And he said, he looked at me, he said, well, if I was you, the best advice I can give for your career is go out there and marry a Chinese bloke. Which I, you know, later on the dance floor, I had to tell Rupert to, you know, rack off. He was cramping my style. So here we are at the start of Web3, and here I am again. And I have come a long way from Go to get here. And it's even actually amazes me that I'm absolutely so excited about the future of the internet. And I've seen, I'm old enough to see all the troubles and all the woes and all the things that have gone wrong. And one of the main things is that there are not enough women in leadership roles, not enough female founders. And we're going to talk about that tonight. So that's enough about me. But I'll just quickly, so I've been in my deep dive. In my capacity, I invest. I'm a VC. I raise capital. I invest in extraordinary startups and founders. And I'm doing a lot of my main focus is social impact and you know, how do we use these tools to create alternative asset class investment? How do we operate in a world of climate catastrophe and peak oil and terror, the world's on fire. I'd love to see these tools fall in the hands of people like you, faces that representation matters and storytellers matter, and the way that we code, Indigenous, you know, lives matter. Like, all of this has to come in this beautiful swirl to create the future we've imagined, and it's the rise of the sacred feminine.
Amazing. Thank you so much for those introductions. I think you can all agree we have a phenomenal panel here tonight, and thank you each and every one of you for being here. But I'd love to know, and Liza, you just touched on it there so quite beautifully, but you've been on a journey, you've seen Web 2, now Web 3. What are some of the barriers that women face? Like, why aren't there more women in technology? Why aren't there more women coming through into Web 3? This is open to all. I'd love to get your thoughts and opinions on how we can bring more women into this space.
I'd like to start with that because I've been studying this exact topic. 0.7% of capital went to sole female-led tech founders in the last 2 years out of all the private capital. The private capital doubled in that time. Now, did anyone see Elon Musk's text messages that were leaked from that court case? Do you know how private equity works? It's g'day mate, crack a tinny. There's $250 million. So it's a boys' club, and we need structural change. We need cultural change and behavioural change. And I've only recently, very recently in my career, really started to call out unconscious bias, and I do it as an activist in real time. And I think that's pushing into where we need, you know, where we need to get to, like what's happening with in Iran at the moment. I think there's flavors of cultural change and big movements. So I think it's structural to start with, but
thanks. So I started my career in one of the big four accounting firms, and I definitely really struggled from early on just to look up and go, okay, there's, you know, women that I wanted to be like, which was quite hard for me early on. So I think out of when I was there, there was probably about 40 partners. I think there were two of them were women. And, you know, even in business today, like my main role is business development, and I find it quite challenging because a lot of the people and the decision makers I have to deal with are men. So and my business partner, he's amazing, but, you know, he does a lot of his business deals out drinking, probably at strip clubs. I don't know what he's doing, to be honest, but it's really hard, like at the footy, I don't know, hopefully working hard. But, you know, it's so much easier for him because, you know, it's just a lot of men in key decision-making positions. So when I get the chance to actually talk to incredible women and work with them, like, it makes my job and, you know, so much more enjoyable. So I think we definitely need to, like, it has to change. But, you know, it's always going to be challenging, I think, for women because, say, if you have children, you've got to take time off work. And so it does become harder to have, like, a very clear career path without being interrupted. So the more that we can support women around us, like, you know, I actually post a lot on LinkedIn, and I have to say, like, I haven't had that many negative comments over the years, but they've always, if I've ever had them, they've always been from women, you know, judging my appearance or anything like that. And I sort of think it's so hard already being a woman in business. Like, we need to support each other and not tear each other down. So I think definitely it comes from having amazing women around you to support you and lift you up. But also I think it's exactly like what you were saying, like, you've got to call out that behavior. And I can tell you it's really difficult because you don't want to be seen as shrill or, like, you know, you're causing a scene, like when men are, like, objectifying you or anything. So I
must say, like, I'm still working on that because I don't know how to say it without looking like, you know, making look like I'm making a massive deal out of it. So that's something I'm still working on, but it's definitely something I'm really aware of, and I do want to tell and educate the men around me, like, tell them when they've done something amazing. I know it sounds really like you're treating them like a dog, but you've got to tell them, like, you know, it was really great that you acknowledged all the women in the room when you were in a meeting, for example. Something as simple as that, because they probably don't even realize that, you know, a lot of the time, like, I'll be in a meeting with, say, all men, and they always just look at the other men, and you're just sitting there as a woman going, hello, like, can you look at me? Like, I'm actually the boss here. So, you know, I think the more that we can all stand up for each other and actually call out, you know, behavior that isn't great, then we can hopefully start to get more women, you know, in positions where they actually belong.
I'll turn the mic right way around. I also just think we have a structural issue in general, like with language. Like, no one just rolls out of bed and go, I'm going to be non-fungible today. Like, the language is really inaccessible. And so when the basics of the language is inaccessible, it's really hard to then think about how do I apply this in a real world context. And so if you think about, you know, I'm a huge fan of the Ethereum blockchain, but if I look at, you know, the Polygon team, like, arguably the best business development team in the world, onboarded Starbucks, Disney, you name it, they've onboarded them in the last 12 months incredibly well. And you know what? People that are buying their coffee and getting their Odyssey points are going to tap a bank card on a machine that is going to be connected to the blockchain. Do you think that customer is going to have any idea that they're interacting with Web3? Absolutely not. Are they going to track their Odyssey points to redeem a cup? Abso-bloody-lutely. And so that's the level of seamlessness that we need to reach in that what I call ease of access. It's got to be one click, one tap, and we are definitely not there in terms of the marketplaces we have today, the wallet applications that we have today. We're at the dial-up internet stage of capability, which means the biggest thing in Web3 has not been built yet. The biggest organizations that we're all going to interact with have not been built yet. And it's a race to take first ground. And so I think once we get that, you know, what I call the Apple Pay ease in Web3, we will start to see greater strides, and people have more confidence to build and integrate, like Adobe turning on a mint button for artists. That's going to see mass adoption in a way that people aren't like, oh, I'm going to adopt Web3 today. Mm. It's just going to be a seamless transition in our lives. Mm. So we're a couple of years away from that.
Mm. Brilliant. Thank you so much. And there's been some lovely points that you've all touched upon there. And I think it's genuinely, like, we are at the beginning, but kicking off, I think I was listening to a podcast today, and it's roughly 8% of creators and founders in the Web3 space at the moment are female, and that is just such a huge gap when we are on almost like an equal playing field at the moment. So to see so many women here today just really curious and interested really means a lot, and we need more diversity and inclusion brings more diverse and inclusive ideas, and that's something that's really important. I think I was speaking to Isabella just before we sat down this evening, and we were just discussing the concept of you cannot be what you cannot see. And we were at an event a couple of weeks back, and I shared with Isabella that concept was discussed, but one of the women on one of the D&I panels that we were sat at said, scrap that. If you cannot see it, be it. And that is, I thought, hell yeah, right, that is actually more of an attitude that I'm going to take, and I think that's one that, you know, we should all really try and adopt. So thank you so much for sharing that all there. Catherine, I'm going to lead the next question on to you. So look, you are actually, Georgie and I absolutely see you as being a pioneer in this space. You have directed and led two amazing sellout NFT projects, Apocalyptic Queen Apes and Queen Apes. And we genuinely see you as really a leading force for women in this space. And you've been very inspiring for the both of us. So thank you for being so active on Twitter. Thank you for not being able to not say GM in the morning. But could you actually share a little bit about that process in terms of the projects that you've had an involvement in and how you've actually helped and contributed to those projects being so successful?
Well, the apocalyptic, see, one thing about being a woman in Web3, like my biggest piece of advice, and this probably applies to the men too, like you need an NFT buddy, and it can't be someone you live with. Like ideally, someone that's on the opposite side of the world as you, so that you're covering the time zones. So for example, my NFT wife is Lisa Jo. She's one of the Queen's leadership team members, and she's in Arizona, and she rang me at 3:48 this morning because The Walking Dead minted at 6 a.m. this morning. So she doesn't call me at 5:55 to be like, the mint's in 5 minutes, 3:40 something a.m. this morning. Anyway, she's like, the mint's on this morning, let's do a Spaces for an hour. And I'm like, okay. So you jump on Twitter Spaces and then you catch the news, and you catch the news before everything wakes up. And so before I know it, you know, we've got Coinbase announcing, you know, on Prime TV this week, like 3 years behind the scenes look at Web3, and you're seeing OpenSea launching bulk listings, and it's so exciting. It's like an addiction. It's fantastic. But news is currency and relationships are currency right now. And so if I think about the journey over the last 2 years, like a lot of my relationships have been around angel investing and backing women. I think early on when I stepped into Web3, like I remember the mint of the Board 8 Yacht Club. Like if I could wind back the clock, I would mint a million Bored Apes and not so many pixie puppies that were little pixelated puppies that like jumped up and down like this. And I'm like, everyone's going to want a puppy that does this. And instead we got Bored Apes, but you know, not the best call. But it became really apparent to me that there were like special little rooms of all men. And then the world kind of shut its borders and it was this virtual world, and they were in a coordinated way, minting project after project and creating life change, generational wealth. And I was like, where are the women? Is this thing working? and then I saw people like Gary Vee step forward. And I'll never forget that day when he stepped in, and he would regularly put out calls. If you're an artist stepping into Web3, share your art. I'm going to help you get your first sale today. And I remember distinctly the day, and he bought Sarah Borman's, otherwise known as Sparky, from Women in Weapons. He bought her first piece, and she was a nurse working the front lines in COVID. And he said, do more, build a collection. You're not thinking big enough. And I think that is true for women in Web3. A lot of people step in as solo artists and maybe list 1, 5, 10 pieces and don't see it through, whereas men are really confident in their lack of things they haven't done before in a way that I am jealous. Like I wish that was ingrained in more of us. And they're like, we're going to do 10,000 pieces and we're going to win 0.05 and it's going to sell out. And it was. And so I, you know, seed invested $100,000 and minted out Women and Weapons and Fame Ladies and Women Rise and the list goes on. And I did that and held spaces, consistent spaces. And I was like the only woman for a very long time. I was one of the first Aussies to get NFT Twitter spaces. It was the coolest and really dangerous. And so when I thought, who am I going to step into a project team with, I decided to step in with the Apocalyptic Apes because I'm all for a good cause. Cleaning the seas, replacing plastics has to do social good as well as being a viable business model. But I also wanted to help integrate some of the utility that I thought we hadn't done yet, like IP rights and, you know, deals with we have a partnership with Mutiny Records and we bring music licensing and have deals, you know, with Netflix and Xbox and some incredible things that I never thought that a girl from, you know, Australia in Melbourne lockdown could be doing deals with LA music companies and talent companies to broadcast, you know, artists that were trying to step into Web3 for the first time and try and give art a chance to sell out so that teams that had women in them had a chance to get beyond the mint. That's all I wanted. I just wanted women to get beyond the mint and see, can you shift this project from a Web3 project to a company? And that's what's exciting about this time now in Web3. We're seeing really successful women step in and we're seeing companies be built. Lisa Mayer, you know, Serena. Bless Serena and Serena Ventures backing them. And you're starting to now see some really incredible Web3 companies stand up. And so that's why I got involved, because it was too hard for women to sell out, and then it was too hard for them to transition from selling out to transitioning to a company. And that's what I do best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I just want to say, actually, Catherine, that's just so inspiring, and you have done so much for women in this space. So, and Pam and I, obviously, we absolutely love you and think you're amazing. So thank you. It's people like you that really do make the difference, and for that, we're very grateful. But Liza, I want to go on to you. Obviously, being a VC in this space and being at the front of new innovation and technology, like, why do you think now is the time for women, especially, to get into Web3? Like, what are the opportunities? Why should every single woman in this room right now be excited about this opportunity?
I think it's about controlling capital flow. And what I do a lot of thinking about where power lies and how we access it. And when you when you understand VC markets, private equity, investment banking, that's where the money, that's where the fun begins. So earlier this year, I got 100 of my best mates and dragged them into a group, and I called it Women in the Metaverse, because I think there's a big amount of intergenerational wealth transfer happening at the moment, and the investors of the future are people I'm looking at here today, and probably not the kind of investors of today. So I'm really, really interested in how it's going to disrupt the VC industry, how we can create really interesting pooled capital products that are based around micro niche communities that can really support interests that maybe women have that men can't see. You know, I think it's imperative, and there's someone in the crowd tonight who I'm speaking with next month about a new technology startup business in fashion. But anyone starting out now that isn't starting out with the future of the internet in mind, I think, is crazy. You know, so it's about really, in the VC circles, they say there's a zero sum chance this is not going to happen. And so I watch where the capital is flowing, where the smart money goes, how we look at now, you know, fiat cap tables and crypto cap tables. I think, you know, it's been really interesting to watch the bear market, and this happened in Web 1.0, where I've been through every single tech crash in the world. And so what happens now is that real genuine businesses accelerate. And like you said, Catherine, we're building all the infrastructure as we're jumping, as we're falling, and the company, you know, everything's happening in tandem. And I've recently just had my identity stolen, which is awesome. And I've been bounced off Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp permanently. So some person was putting child pornography across my platforms in Abu Dhabi, and so I've lost 30 years of, or whatever it is, you know, like years of content I don't own, I can't access. It's, why would I want to, I will never ever do that, you know, let's support a Web 2 photo sharing site ever again in the future. And I've never been more motivated than to build digital ownership. And that's they're my main reasons.
Thanks very much for that. Like, I think digital ownership is definitely one of the main reasons that I think we will start to see mass adoption with, you know, users in the space as well. Lisa, on to you. So as we know, I can't say Mooning without thinking about bums now, but thank you for that. So you've obviously got the Web3 marketing company Mooning. Congratulations on that, by the way. But we know, for anyone that follows Lisa as well, she shares amazing content on the daily. But you must see and hear of so many new ideas, innovation, projects that are out there. Could you just sort of share with the audience in terms of what you're seeing at the market at the moment, what some of the most exciting use cases are, and what you think the main innovators are at the moment?
Very good question. So we actually started Mooning when pre-crash. So we were getting a lot of really shit classware. Speak that out. Really shit projects where people thought that you could just release 10,000 pictures of cats in top hats and become a millionaire overnight. And we'd ask them how much they wanted to make from the mint. They'd be like,
$20 million. And we go, what's your marketing budget? They're like 2 cents. And we're like, next. So yeah, there was a lot of just rubbish. And then the interesting thing is obviously the crash happened and then we were going, oh my God, do we even have a company? Is anyone going to even be wanting to invest in this space? And the interesting thing is we've been speaking to quite a few Web2 companies who are like, okay, we actually need to look to the future. And for a lot of our clients, they actually didn't do an amazing job in Web2. And I just said to them, just forget Web2. It's like, you're so far behind. Like, don't start an Instagram now. Like, you're just really far behind. I said, why would you want to be coming last in Web2 when you can be one of the first in Web3? So for me, I'm like, that is so exciting as a marketer, because it's really hard to do something new in Web2. You can literally do anything in Web3, and it could not only, this is what I've been saying to my clients, it might not only be just an industry first or a country first, it could be a world first. And even just like the weirdest thing, things make news. Like, I saw an article about Disney, like Disney's like advancing more into Web3. I'm like, oh my God, what are they doing? Like a Mickey Mouse NFT or something. And they'd put an ad up for an NFT attorney. I'm like, how is this even news? It's so bizarre.
They're suing people for copyright first. Yeah. That's their first strategy.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Maybe I should apply for that job. Maybe I'm not covering
more.
Yeah, okay, good point, good point. So I think, you know, it sounds so cliche, but, you know, when we think about projects and say utilizing NFTs, for example, I'm sure you've heard the term utility. If you haven't, it's pretty much like the benefits you get from holding an NFT. And early on, as soon as I saw someone with utility trip to Dubai, I was like, red flag alert. Like, that's a walking red flag project. Like, that's a rug pull that is not going anywhere. You're going to just throw your money all away. So now we're actually seeing companies really think about how they can utilize NFTs maybe in their loyalty program, for example. And I've actually seen quite an interesting shift in loyalty. So prior to actually starting my first agency, I worked at Witchery, fashion company, you guys, some of you might know. I actually went on my first day. So I came from law, it was like super freaking daggy in tax. And on the first day, I'm like, oh, holy shit, this is going to be like Sex in the City. So I walked in, I had the most hideous white and green floral dress on. I had bright pink shoes on because I thought, oh my God, I look like Carrie Bradshaw. This is like going to be amazing. And I walked in and everyone was wearing black. I was like, oh shit, like this is fashion. Shit is black. So obviously I'm all in black now. Learned my lesson. But I worked on their loyalty program there. So I actually managed a lot of really hardcore Witchery fans. Like, some people would go into Witchery every single day. I'm like, what could you possibly be looking at Witchery every single day? There's like not new stuff there. But they're really dedicated fans. And so looking at loyalty in Web2, it's very much like that spend and earn model. So you move up the different tiers by spending. Whereas if I look at loyalty in Web3, for example, people are buying in almost like memberships into projects, and they're buying different rarities to get different benefits, you know, in projects. So people are actually spending money actually to buy the memberships, which is quite different. And then if I think about loyalty in Web2, the community is very segregated. So people aren't really mixed together. So think about Qantas frequent fly points, for example. You might have platinum level. No one knows anyone else in platinum level unless you happen to know a friend and you're like, hey, I'm in platinum level. And they're like, oh, me too. But they don't really interact together. Whereas if you think about NFT communities, it's just all like people that have the same NFT of putting as their profile picture. And there's an affinity straight away. So, you know, even they're wearing merchandise, they might see someone else in like, you know, Bored Ape merchandise, and there's already that connection there. So I love that we're going to see a real shift in the way that socials, you know, social media is playing out. We're going to see a shift in brand equity and acceleration of brand equity by giving NFT holders commercial rights. So I feel like from a marketing perspective, Web3 is going to change the game completely. And this is a really exciting time for you guys to you know, maybe launch your first NFT project, you know, buy your first NFT, get out there, go into the metaverse, buy a VR headset. Honestly, if someone knows how to take a really good photo with a VR headset on where you don't look like a massive dork, please let me know, because I feel like it's impossible. But yeah, it's a really exciting time. So I'd encourage you, just to honestly, the quickest way to learn is to get your feet dirty. So feet dirty, is that how you say it? Is that saying?
Hands.
Get your feet dirty too if you want, as well.
I won't say nasty joke here, it's like not appropriate, but so I think, you know, it's great that you're all here. This is like amazing. So this is like a great first step for some of you, or great like middle step, but definitely just get in there and get active, and that's the best way to learn. And you're actually, like, crazily enough, like, you're one of the first in the world. Like, the fact that you're at this event, like, there were people, so many people don't even know what an NFT is still. So you're here and you're early, so take that advantage. Like, you're actually leading Web3, so yay for that. It's really awkward.
100%. And that leads me on to my next question to Catherine. So there's a lot of people here probably wanting to look into NFTs, get into NFTs. What are some of the things that you look for when investing, and what are some red flags that we should all be aware of?
No one is going to sell your land in Bali, like, for an NFT project. Like, just not going to happen. There's a couple of things I look for. I look for people that have built before, so successfully built businesses, because building is not for the faint of heart. So I look at people's credentials. I also look at who in my network is connected with these people, because we largely know everyone. And so if they're new on the scene, I'm extra cautious. I also look at the art, and I look at the mission. And if it looks too good to be true, it is too good to be true in Web3. And what I would say is that you don't feel this pressure to invest. Don't feel this pressure to buy. Like, I definitely spent probably my first year in crypto just understanding what was real and what was bullshit. And just to be clear, about 95% of it's bullshit. So you're actually, like, I'd rather just say get your Web3 DAR, like, tuned in, and then work out, listen to people, listen to spaces, ask questions. There's no such thing as a stupid question. If a project is legit, they will explain to a first-time buyer a million times over how to transact, how to transfer, how to buy an NFT safely, what cold storage is, get a ledger, get a SafePal, how to operate securely. So I would say they're the sorts of things I look for. If I think about, you know, some of the organizations that I'm really excited about, you know, I'm really excited by the Truth ecosystem. I think they've done incredibly well. And they've done things differently, have kind of created their own path and not copied the kind of the first of CryptoPunks or Bored Apes. I really like what Boss Beauties is doing. I really like what World of Women is doing. I really like what we're doing in music and sustainability and removing plastics from the ocean. I think that we're seeing kind of the next generation of work come through. And when I say that, I think that we've got an oversupply of profile picture projects, and so now what you're starting to see is the rise of Web3 fashion, the maturation of Web3 land, and metaverse strategies in general. You know, Gucci announced their new CEO of metaverse this week. I'm like, can't wait to buy a virtual Gucci. Please be not as expensive as a real one. I also think that we're really seeing music really shake up the place, and so I think, you know, the fact that you're seeing Warner Brothers Music sign a massive Web3 deal and an onboarding strategy for music tells me that they're no longer in, like, the Web2 version of the music industry is a little bit shook by artists that are stepping away from the talent pipeline and that are building solo in Web3. So it's great to see so many musicians doing well. You know, I think Muse in the UK, like, a couple of weeks ago, had the number one song on the iTunes chart, on Web2, and in Web3, on all. And I was like, oh, it was the first time it's ever happened. And I was like, this has got to get these big studios shaking in their boots that are taking such huge clips of the ticket from artists. And for me, just in general, I think artists have been kind of hard done this last century, if I'm honest with you. Like, as a society, we've kind of really downgraded the arts in general and created, you know, it not being a purpose and it being a secondary thing to the thing that puts a roof over my head. And so I'm all for a renaissance period. Like, we need it to come back in a way that I want to see, you know, artists building community, like, doing what they want as their purpose, as their main gig. And so it's lovely to see them step into this space and buy their first house and do those sorts of things that they've been really struggling to do for a long time. So it's really exciting at the moment. And I would just say follow me on Twitter. Like, I'm not usually far off picking things.
Yeah.
And I do really call it. There's some great people in this room here that you should be following as well that genuinely tweet out some really interesting stuff. And so I'd also just say don't feel pressure. I'm going to repeat it so many times. Don't rush into buying. Don't. I promise you, like, 5% of what is for sale in the market is valuable and 95% of it's going to zero. So don't feel pressured to rush on in and buy something. And when in doubt, just buy something that's already proven itself, because there's now a lot of those in the market.
Lovely. Thank you so much for that. And I also love what Boss Beauties are doing at the moment with Lisa Meyer, and I love the Super Bees. Just quite recently, it was book week, for any of you that have got kids in the room, and my daughter wanted to be a superhero. She wanted to be Batwoman, and it's a concept where you dress up and you take the matching book in with you. And I trolled the Surf Coast and the whole of Geelong to see if I could get a Batgirl book, which it was impossible. I couldn't get it. I would have had to get it shipped from the US. So again, just like being a female creator and innovator in the space, representation absolutely matters. You know, diversity, we can talk about it just from a gender perspective, but it's also, as we all know in the room, a lot deeper than that as well. But just to see so many emerging females and female artists and creators in the space more and more each week, it's phenomenal to see. So thank you for sharing some of those projects that you feel particularly confident in. But I think that is just so important. Like, be curious, absolutely, but do not feel the pressure, and absolutely make sure that any projects that you invest in, you feel particularly aligned with and you like what they're all about. So thank you for that. Lisa and Liza, you're obviously both like huge advocates for the space in its entirety. We've got a few people in the room that are actually just brand new to the space and brand new to NFTs. If you could give out any advice to those newbies in the room about looking into sort of minting their first ever NFT, what would be your advice?
I'd say get on the Sisterhood Club.
Yay!
Yeah, and I totally echo everything that Catherine said. I think my first COVID experience in my van down the coast doing a deep dive. I spent at least a year trying to understand and get the radar. When I did that, I thought it'd be a good idea to get 100 other people to do it with me. So I did create my own Women in the Metaverse group. And what I learned was, I think that potentially, you know, women learn differently about technology, and we learn one to many. You know, like, I think the community element's really important. Get a friend, and I think what I love about the Web3 community is it's just so open. You know, that everyone's so welcoming. You know, you reach out to people and you'll be surprised how much. I was really surprised in some of the Twitter hangs, you know, how much free information you get from tax lawyers and what, you know, like, it was foreign to me to think that everyone would want to help each other in that way. You know, being so well versed in the Web 1-2 corporate worlds. So it's, I think, very opening and welcoming. I'm actually working on a really exciting product right now, which is a Women in the Metaverse ed tech platform. And I'd be really excited to welcome any single one of you to reach out to me. And we're looking at, you know, how do we learn? Like, especially as women, a lot of women are busy. You know, we have careers, we have families. You might only have 2 minutes, 4 minutes. What's the 2-minute read? What can you listen to? What are the podcasts when you're on your commute? What can you, sometimes in the shower, you know, you can put the Twitter spaces on the shower. Like, these are, when we get these moments as women, when we're so multi-dimensional, multifaceted. I communicate with my kids through games, so I've been a gamer for a long time, kind of, anyway. But you know, I think that's a way to connect with your kids too. You know, like, get in some of those bigger multiplayer games. you know, look at your NBA 2Ks, and sometimes the kids will say, oh, look, you've had a bad day. I'll buy a pair of shoes. We'll go shopping in the game, you know. And it's the same areas of the brain light up, you know. Like, so they, I was at the Nike store in Brighton, and my 11-year-old was trying on the net fleece, whatever they're called, tracksuit pants. And he yelled out, oh, can I get these trackies? I'll trade you my Kyrie Irving NFT. And the people behind the store were like, what is that 10-year-old talking about? Like, he's like, no, none of it goes over 500. No. So I'd say we're all learning together. Like, even like we have this conversation, all the investors, when we're looking, investing in tech, Web3 tech companies, you know, we kind of look at each other around the table. It's a bit of a game of posing, eyeballing everyone, but everyone's, no one knows. That's the best bit. That's what I love the most about it. We're at the frontier. Like, this is kind of, those feels from way back in 2007. Like, this is a land grab. And we're alpha, and you're here, and this is Australia, and we're women. This is so exciting. Like, it's really just start, you know, just start off by, you know, yeah, definitely following people like Catherine on Twitter and Georgie and Pam and I'm sure Lisa as well. You know, let's start our own community here and work together and all help each other. But just, yeah, keep your eyes and ears peeled and get amongst it.
Amazing. And Catherine, back to you. So there's lots of people wanting to start their own projects and maybe don't know where to start, or being in their market, should they even begin? Like, what's your advice for anyone here today that is thinking about starting their own project in this market right now? Should they? And if you say yes, what should they be thinking about?
Absolutely. I think don't be afraid of building in Web3. I would say your first 12 months is building your network. And so do all the big events. Do Art Basel in Miami. Do NFT New York. Do NFT Fest November 23rd, 24th in Melbourne. Go and see what good looks like. Like, there is a standard. There are benchmark communities out there. Some incredible Australian projects out there. You know, Dead Fellas, Lazy Lions, Sisterhood. Like, there's some wonderful, wonderful leaders in Australia that are doing incredible things in this space. And so I think that the most common mistake that people make in Web3 is they think that they can open a Twitter account today and next week they can start minting. And the reality is that the community part of Web3 is the most important part of building if you want sustainability. If you want to come in and make money and then walk away from the project, I'm not a fan of you, and I'm not a fan of doing that. So it means take your time, build your network. There's no such thing as a stupid question. Events are really fun too. Like, we've been underdone. Like, we had our peak Web3 like boom seasons, and we were like locked down. It was so disappointing. And then you're watching everyone around the world celebrate Web3. It was like major FOMO. It was not good. So I think the next 12 months, like particularly Art Basel, NFT Fest in Melbourne, and NFT NYC are my top three on the list for the next kind of 6-7 months. And I think they're going to go off because people are like, particularly the Australian contingents, like, I think we're going to behave badly in a really fun Australian way because we're underdone. So just build the relationships first and just be kind to yourself. And if you're a female founder, my advice is whatever you're thinking of charging, at a minimum, double it.
Ooh, triple it. Yeah.
Be unapologetic. I love that. No, thank you so much for that. That's really valuable advice and I hope, you know, people have taken away from that. If you are thinking of building, go for it. Lisa, back to you. I feel as though I've asked you quite a few questions today. Anyway, so back to more of a marketing standpoint. Could you talk to us a little bit about what are the differences between Web2 marketing and Web3 marketing, and how can projects and businesses at the moment successfully market in this new space?
Ooh, that's a very good question. We have like 10 hours. I feel like I could talk about this like a really long time. I'm going to keep it to a couple of points. So I've already spoken a bit about loyalty, so I want to talk about social media. So one thing I think about Web2 social is that it's actually not really social media. It's actually more media, because if you think about the brands that you follow, they rarely actually engage back. So they post a photo and then, you know, some of the community members might comment and the brand rarely actually even comments back. So really that's kind of quite media. It's not really social. Plus, if you think about it, the actual community members themselves don't really comment back either. So I look at Web3 and goddamn, the community is so needy. It's like not even funny. Like if you're not talking to them every single day, they honestly think you're doing nothing or you're dead. Like they're ready to send out a search party. Yeah. So that's
sleeping is also a crime in Web3. Yeah.
It seriously is. Like honestly, I'm like, go to sleep, people. Like stop commenting. But yeah, it's really interesting because we've seen platforms like traditionally in Web2, you've got Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn. Like those are kind of the major platforms. In Web3, it's more Twitter and Discord. Discord, I freaking hate Discord. But it's like it was a platform used for gamers. Honestly, it took me like about an hour just to sign in to the first time I used Discord. It was just so complicated. But it's really good as a customer service hub. I like to think of it as a way that you can chat. You know, if anything goes wrong, you can easily communicate with the brand. And the interesting thing about Discord is we're finding that the actual community members are helping shoulder that customer service burden, so to speak. So you might jump in and actually see moderators, and they're just generally from the community. So it won't just have to be on the brand to actually talk to the community. Really hyper-engaged people would actually jump into the project and help moderate the Discord too. So that's definitely really, it's so high touch in Web3. It's crazy. Also, something that's different is, I mean, I grew up in the Instagram era where everything just has to be perfect. Like it's so filtered and, you know, you only show people generally the finished product. You sort of rarely show that journey. Where in Web3, you really have to build in front of your audience. So you've got to show them what you're doing, get them to, you know, contribute, get them to be part of the journey. So for me, I actually love that because it makes them feel a bit more engaged with the project, what you're building. And even when I think about capital raising, and I think, you know, Gary Vee's done this great example with a restaurant called Fly Fish Club, which is honestly really hard to say. It's like a tongue twister. Thanks, Gary. But he released memberships as NFTs for his restaurant. And he did two tiers of membership. So one was, I think, $12,000 and the other one was $24,000. And from that, he raised $14 million just selling memberships. I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to go to this restaurant. And I realized it hadn't even been built yet. I was like, what the hell? Like, people are spending all this money on a restaurant that doesn't exist. What they did was they've been using that money to actually fund the build of the restaurant. So it'll open this year, I think actually maybe in November in New York. Now, the interesting thing is with the membership, you can actually lease that out. So if you're not living in New York, you can actually lease it out so it becomes an asset. So someone can actually, rent your membership to make a booking because you need a membership to make a booking. So all of a sudden, using the power of blockchain technology, he's created these assets for people. So previously, like if I was, say, like a silver member for Witchery, I couldn't lease that out to, you know, someone else to give them my benefits. So I thought that was actually quite an interesting way of capital raising using Web3 technology. And then finally, one of my favorite ways that Web3 technology is really changing the game in the marketing space is the acceleration of brand IP. So I think about, say, Nike. So if Nike released an NFT, all of a sudden you don't get to own the Nike swoosh. You don't get to use the brand to create whatever you want to do. Otherwise, you'll definitely get sued by Nike or Disney. But in Web3, what projects are doing, like Bored Ape Yacht Club, CryptoPunks, which are some of the blue chip projects in the space, is they're actually giving holders the commercial rights to utilize the artwork in the actual NFT that they hold, which for me is actually super smart because now you don't just have one entity driving brand IP and brand equity. You all of a sudden have, say, if there's 10,000 NFTs, 10,000 potential people driving the acceleration of that brand. So if you look at Bored Ape, for example, holders have created restaurants, they've done weed, they've done beauty products, alcohol, just utilizing the commercial IP. So that's allowed the project to go from a valuation of zero when it launched in April one to now being valued at $5 billion. Like, that's actually nuts. Like, it's really hard for a company to just seriously go from a zero to $100 million valuation, let alone $5 billion in the space of a year and a half. So because the holders are all, you know, out there saying, this is the brand, this is exciting, we're, you know, creating a restaurant or creating a beauty line with it, it suddenly gets the brand to be amplified so much further. And it's also, you think about it from this perspective, it makes it so much more creative, because if you've just got people sitting in the Nike headquarters going, what can we do with the Nike swoosh? Like, they're probably not thinking about doing a restaurant or a weed. I don't know if weed's probably not a brand for Nike, but they're not thinking about, you know, doing creative things with the actual brand. Whereas you've got all of a sudden 10,000 minds globally going, okay, cool, how can we actually accelerate this brand? So for me, I actually find that really exciting.
100%. And hopefully everyone here tonight can just see there is massive opportunity in this space, which is why we're all sat here very enthusiastic. And I want to like lead over to the audience now. Did anyone have any questions for panelists here today? Please don't be shy. No question is silly. Yeah. Anyone with any questions tonight?
Oh, thank you so much. I'm a total newbie, and I'm in the healthcare space. I'm a physio working in the NDIS and just crypto curious and curious about Web3. So I was just wondering if any of you have any ideas about what's happening in healthcare and that sort of stuff with Web3.
You're seeing some really large brands that are starting up. When you mention healthcare, I think immediately of Alpha Girls Club. It's an amazing project founded by an ex-Google technology exec and his daughter, who is an artist, and their sole purpose is mental health. And so they're a huge community. The art's incredible. If you haven't had a look, now it's a very cheap time to buy. I'm a huge fan. And then you've got, you know, projects like the Crypto Maurice, where they actually have counselling and psychology appointments available to their holders. It's actually part of the utility. So it was then, like, I was like, instant buy. Like, instant buy, I will have that free psychologist included. It's not free because you buy the NFT. But mental health, particularly in Web3, yeah, because we don't sleep enough, and there's this kind of, there's this high, the real high highs and real low lows, which is what happens when you're in like the dial-up internet stage of any growing sector, is that, you know, you have real extremes. And so I do worry about the mental health of teams and people that are solo building away from these larger organisations. So one thing we haven't talked about tonight that I would more just flag is that there's a way to be in Web3 in your career not being a founder or not being part of a founding team that is less stressful. Like, if you don't want to go, that's, you know, complete from scratch startup vibe. There are so many incredible companies in Australia, Magic Eden, Immutable. There are teams in Australia right now that are building scale, have been valued over $1 billion, and they're really starting that journey. And they need lawyers and marketers and accountants and traditional skills just as much as they need their Web3 skills. So if you haven't had a look at Web3 careers, I'd encourage you to. There's also a great project called Root Troop, incredible founder in Stone, and they just are launching a Web3 recruiting platform, and I think that, you know, they're the SEEK.com of Australian Web3. So I think that if you haven't had a glance at what does a Web3 career look like, not as a builder or a founder, there's huge ways to participate where you can learn and get paid a salary at the same time. So if you haven't considered that, I'd be open to that as well.
Oh, I was going to say, if I could add to that, so everyone that I've hired has never worked in Web3 before because it's still new. So I just hire people that are obsessed with Web3 because I know they're probably not going to sleep like I don't sleep. But I know that the pace is so fast. If you're not genuinely interested in it, it's like,
it's not for you.
You will not survive. It's really hardcore. It's like being on a treadmill. Like, you're just constantly going, you're like, who's entered the space today? I jump on, I'm like, well, who's entered the space? What's going on? Who's like been cancelled? What's like, you know, what's the latest? So I can say that you're like, if you're thinking about going into the space, and also, I don't know if Nicole Nicole here. I was talking to one of my friends. Yeah. So Nicole, sorry, I'm just going to call you out there. We're talking before about, what you want to do with your career, and then you're like, I want to go into Web3 and explore that and see if that's possible. I was like, good on you, because you're going to be one of the few people doing that, and you don't necessarily need to have Web3 on your resume, because let's face it, not that many people are going to have experience in Web3. It's just, there's just not that many companies doing it. But if you can put yourself out there and just say, I'm obsessed with Web3, hire me because I live and breathe it, like, that's going to go a long way. And that's how I got a job in fashion, actually, because I love fashion, and I obviously came from a tax background, and I think when they got my application, they were like, who the hell is this person? I did this like 7-page amazingly photoshopped application, but I did it in Paint, so the photoshopping was really honestly, Microsoft, please never cancel Paint. It's like the best application ever. I think just having, having passion for something, for me, I'm like, that is so attractive to an employer, that's right, yeah. I feel like that goes so much further, because you can pretty much teach anything, but you can't teach passion and genuine interest in a space. And then on the healthcare side, I saw a hospital, I think, went into Web3. I was like, how can a hospital go into Web3? And they were doing consultations in the metaverse. Oh, that's actually so interesting, because you think about telehealth, because I would never, I do my therapy now just online with my therapist, and previously, I always would be doing it in person, and I don't know why, she's always used to sit really far away from me, and I'd always be leaning forward. I'm like, is this a test? Because why are you sitting so far away from me? And I never thought I could not do it in person. Then obviously with COVID came, and I was like, I need help, please help me. She's like, I can't see you, let's do Zoom. I was like, Zoom, that's gonna suck. And then I did, and I was like, oh, it's actually really convenient. So I think we're now so used to actually just being able to converse online. So then that's that next evolution, which will elevate it even more. So you can still feel like you're actually in the room with the person, like you've got your little dorky headset on, but the experience will be so much more elevated, because as humans, we're not actually designed to sit there on Zoom all day. And one of my clients is actually telling me this really interesting fact, Zoom wastes a lot of energy, because say, for example, and I think I am definitely guilty of this, you might talk really loudly without realizing on Zoom, and no one tells you, they just lower the volume. So you're just wasting all this energy going, yeah, so Web3 is amazing, and they're just lowering the volume, and you're just wasting all this energy talking. And then people actually always look at their own camera, because they're so conscious of themselves, and we waste so much energy doing that. So he actually gave me this tip, he goes, just turn your camera off, because otherwise you'll be so focused on what you look like and you get distracted. I was like, oh, these are all great tips. So now I'm like, can someone please tell me if I'm yelling on Zoom, because I don't want to waste all that energy. But I feel like the metaverse is going to elevate so many experiences, and I think people are scared about it, but it's never going to replace real life, but it can help make those digital interactions so much more exciting. So yeah, and good on you, exciting start of a really cool journey.
Can I just add something to that as well? This is the wise old woman in the corner. One of the things that does concern me a little bit is that 24/7 stuff, the energy rating. And I've been through all that, and I've been through burnout, and I've, through Web 1 and 2, and I'm not going to do it again, Web 3. I think that that's also potentially one of the issues for women. If we can find a way to you can dip into the Web 3 space as an investor, and that's the way I do it, and find incredible projects and entrepreneurs, and you can take your time, you can be gentle, you can meditate, you can be careful. And I don't this super hype. I mean, that's what I think maybe my role is as a wise old person, is to kind of give back in that way, to think that we should be able to use the tech to our advantage. Sleep's so important, nurturing our body, our mental health, and how do we find that in the hyperness, and especially as you age, and we have an aging population. But so that's just a different perspective. So there's different phases and stages and ages, but also we've got the opportunity to this time around to maybe take a more sensible approach, and that'd be my little two bits worth.
No, awesome, thank you. Is there any more questions from the audience? Yes, a couple of questions.
I have a question. This is a really random one. No stupid questions, right? So I've just started my business and 3 months in, and I'm building up my network. And I think this is more of a security or a technical question, and that's fear, like Lisa mentioned, of entering into the space. I'm a crypto investor. I've got NFTs, and the Web3 space is a worldwide community. And I guess sometimes I'm a bit fearful of, you know, if I connect with a certain person, they're going to scam me. They're going to scam me out of my crypto or my NFTs or, you know, whatever I've got going on. And I guess, you know, what would be your advice to someone with my mindset thinking in that way?
First of all, I feel like being scammed in Web3 is a rite of passage, because once you do it, like it just happens, and it will be scammed in a way that you won't realize. Like it might be that you clicked on a malicious link because, by the way, in Discord, your DMs are not open, okay? We don't take random messages from strangers, and we don't click on links ever. Never click on links. So I'd say a couple of things. One, use multiple wallets. So have a Mint wallet, have, you know, your trading wallet, and then have multiple cold storage wallets, and have your cold storage wallets and your seed phrases not in your house. So I'll let you figure out what that is for you, where you'll mentally go, not in my house. Because if you do get socially profiled, and there have been cases in the US in particular where people have been socially profiled and there has been home invasions, you just don't want there to be any sort of valuables in your home. The other thing I would say is that 95% of people in Web3 are really welcoming and wonderful, and the block and the mute button are don't be afraid to use them. I use them on the regular. And I would also say this, like, just build a network of really good white hats and black hats and grey hats, because you will need to phone a friend, particularly if you're working and building in this space. Your Discord may get compromised, your Twitter may get compromised, and it's who you can pick up instantly and say, can you please bring Twitter and let them, like, help me out very quickly, because someone's using my profile to maliciously try and steal from people. yeah, let's talk about that after. So I would just say there's ways to protect yourself, but don't overthink it. Like, there is you're smart. If you can walk to your car safely in Australia, you can absolutely secure yourself in Web3.
Thank you. Awesome. Great question. Yeah. One question over here, and then come to you, Joe.
I think, Liza, this might be more for you. There's this concept of, like, behavioral biometrics. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but our movements in virtual reality can be tracked and used to diagnose us for certain conditions or just understand us better as humans. Obviously, there's creepy applications, but if I just want to see if you've seen any startups or businesses or companies or anyone focusing their efforts on data that comes out of the metaverse and VR.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's fascinating. I think it's such an interesting space, big data, AI, and the biometrics. I mean, it's equally as frightening as it is exciting, and that's what it's kind of hard to know where and how to draw the line, like how much utility we want to give up for free and how much we want to keep. But some of the kind of IMs that come across my desk, I probably get 5 to 10 a day, and the amount of global, you know, innovation in this space is, it's really interesting. I'm seeing a lot of stuff in sports tech, esports, gaming. Poker is apparently now a sport. health tech's huge too. I'm equally as kind of excited about it as I am frightened about it, to be honest.
Do you guys have any?
Oh, yeah. One more question, Jared.
George.
Hey guys, first off, fantastic panel. That was absolutely phenomenal, so I really appreciate it. So my name's Jared. I work for a company called Blue Thumb. We're in art, traditional art, so physical art, painting art, where people want to see and touch and feel art. We naturally have an NFT strategy. I've only been in the company for about 6 weeks or so. We're about helping artists quit their jobs. It's a sort of unofficial vision. So NFTs are fascinating because royalties in the traditional art space don't exist. You buy a piece of art and it gets handed around 10 times. The artist doesn't see a dime. So I've been exploring that in the NFT space, which has been fascinating. A question around accessibility. And when I say accessibility for the Web3 space, I'm talking more socioeconomic status. I've been to a handful of events in the last 6 weeks in this new job, and they've been either crypto bros or very wealthy people. I was wondering if someone could sort of talk to that side of NFTs and Web3 in particular.
I would say you have to look below the surface to find your people in Web3, because 90% of it is male dominated, and that's not a bad thing. There's great men in Web3 and great mentors. In Australia, there's a number of projects that have been incredible at bringing, you know, Indigenous artists and female artists in Australia to the floor, particularly in socioeconomic areas. We had Randy Zuckerberg was part of the advisory team for Meta Angels, which the artist was Aslan Ruby, and a percentage of their profits, she's an Indigenous artist, and a percentage of their profits went into onboarding more Indigenous artists into Web3. You've had Year of the Women with their artist, Yasmin, and they specifically are creating a talent pipeline of Indigenous women and women in remote and socioeconomic struggling areas in Australia to help demystify Web3 and people help them see a career in it. If you haven't checked out what Damien Hirst did in Web3, that's your homework. I can't imagine ever burning an NFT, but I probably would for a physical Damien Hirst piece of art. I'm not going to lie. The dots just get me. And I would say there's a metaverse gallery in Little Collins, just down past Elizabeth. If you haven't checked that out, that's open Thursdays to Sundays. So there is a gallery in Melbourne that you can kind of look and see and get to Art Basel as quickly as you can. Make it on the bucket list.
Yeah.
And just a plug, I'm actually hiring people. If you've got a marketing background and are into Web3, come have a chat to me. I really need to. Yeah.
Nice. Also, Mooning, that sounds like one for you. So
appreciate it. Awesome. Thanks, Jared. Well, let's just thank you so much for everybody coming. Let's put your hands together for the panel guests, Georgie and Pam.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it. And if you did, please give it a little share on your social. And if you have time, please leave a review. And I hope to see you next time. Take care.